The kings of Macedonia, Alexander the Great, the Battle of Arbela Gaugamela, Part 4. Now, as things were getting interesting for Parmenio, Alexander committed a pro domo to the general Melee that was on his right, and may have begun the charge with some or all of his companion cavalry. At the start of the battle, the Persian cavalry had formed a coherent line, but horsemen, far more than close-order infantry, are not suited to maintain alignment in this way. Darius' orders to move to the left to match the angle of Alexander's advance, and then try to envelop the Macedonians, disrupted the neat rows of squadrons, and order fell apart once fighting started. Such very large numbers of horses so close together tend to excite one another, and as some units charged, and more would surge with them, regardless of the orders, the leaders of the units were only a little less enthusiastic than their mounts. The Persian line broke in the clusters, both large and small, with some squadrons in order and others scattered. There is no sign that the Persian infantry supported the horsemen effectively, still less that they formed the steady line. The first line phalanx, with the remaining four pike regiments and the hypaspis, kept advancing, pushing back infantry and cavalry alike. A gap, or perhaps a thinly held area, stretched, developed into the Persian line, and Alexander led the companions and the closest infantry straight at it. Arrian speaks of a great wedge formation without explaining just what this meant on the day. The main force of the attack was angled toward Darius in the center. Now, for a little time, it became a hand-to-hand fight, but when the cavalry with Alexander and Alexander himself pressed vigorously, shoving the Persians and striking their faces with spears, and at the same time the phalanx closed, Darius, who now long been in panic, was the first to turn and flee. Around the same time, whether by chance or as word of the King of Kings' flight spread, the men started to follow. The center, the left wing of the Persian army, simply dissolved. The prodomo and the light troops of the Macedonians had been clinging on against the odds. They also now charged one more time and routed the enemy facing them. Parmenio's wing was still hard-pressed, and he sent a messenger to tell Alexander he needed any support that he could provide. Diodorus claims that the courier couldn't find the young king, who was already busy in the pursuit, while Arrian states that Alexander got the report and led the companions back into the fray. They ran into a mass of Parthian, Indian, and Persian cavalry going in the opposite direction, producing some of the heaviest fighting of the battle, with 60 companion cavalry killed, and many more, including Hephaestion, wounded. Eventually, the Macedonians prevailed, or perhaps some of the enemy broke off and were able to retreat as they intended. Any aid to Parmenio was indirect, and his stubborn resistance at the head of the Thessalians eventually prevailed as the Persian commander Mazaeus realized that Darius and the remainder of the army was in flight, and then ordered his men to retreat as well. Alexander then ordered Parmenio to take the Persian camp, while he led the rest of the cavalry in pursuit. As in all ancient battles, the greatest slaughter was inflicted on a helpless, fleeing enemy. Although Arrian's 300,000 killed and far more prisoners taken is widely inflated, and as his estimate of the Persian numbers before the battle, Diodorus reduces this number to 90,000, while Curtius says about 40,000. But we have no idea whether or not these figures were based on reliable information. The spirit of Darius's army was broken, its camp and supplies overrun, and contingents dispersed. Alexander had no body of fresh cavalry kept in reserve for the moment of pursuit, so the chase and killing was done by weary riders on tired horses, limiting just how much they could do before exhaustion forced a halt. Yet the excitement of the triumph and driving personality of the king who led them pushed what could be done to the very limit, so that 1,000 horses were lost by the Macedonians at Arbela Gaugamela, either killed in the fighting or ridden to death in the aftermath. Half of these were from the companions, who, as always, were in the forefront. Fatalities among the men were once again relatively low. Arrian says just 100, which seems odd, having said that 60 fell in one phase, and he may again be referring only to Macedonians. Curtius says the Macedonians had less than 300 dead, while even Diodorus's 500 represents less than 2% of the army. As always, there are many times more wounded than dead, multiplying the total casualties perhaps as much as 10 times. Apart from Hephaestion, the commanders of the two phalanx regiments were wounded, as was Mendaeus, the man who led the mercenary cavalry charge that opened the battle. Darius was beaten once again, but again he escaped. On October the 2nd, 331 BCE, Alexander captured Arbela and discovered that the King of Kings had already been there and abandoned another royal chariot and departed. There was no prospect of catching him for what remained but the remnants of his guards and the Greek mercenaries, and for some Bactrian cavalry, he was headed not to the rich cities of Babylon, but took the harder route to Media. In time, he might be able to build another army, although the second defeat inflicted on his great army on the ground of his own choice and well suited to their numbers was a far greater blow to his prestige than Issus. And there were more tangible losses to follow. The camps near the battlefield and at Arbela once again filled with luxuries to prompt scorn and delight on the part of the victors. Curtius says there were 4,000 talents of silver at Arbela alone. Alexander brought the main army up from Gaugamela as soon as possible, not least because they were too many corpses to cope with, and all rapidly decaying in the heat, and his own dead received burial. It was probably at Arbela that he sacrificed to celebrate the victory and was proclaimed King of Asia. The celebration was marked by generous gifts to friends and allies. His role as hegemon of the Greek cause remained as important, and he wrote to the polis in Greece and in Asia Minor to say that the tyrannies, presumably in the main of Persia, were abolished and that they might live under their own laws. Plataea was to be rebuilt in honor of the city's sacrifice in the greater Crete cause in 479 BCE, although since Philip had already decreed this after Chaeronea, presumably this was no more than a gift to make its reconstruction all the more splendid. On the basis of heroism of the athlete from Croton and one of the Greek cities of Italy, he brought a trireme to fight at Salamis, and he singled out the community for a gift to celebrate the Hellenic victory. When the advance resumed, Alexander headed for Babylon. So we'll pick up here and then go after the King of Kings. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arians, The Campaigns of Alexander, In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great by Michael Wood, The Wars of Alexander the Great by Haeckel, and The Story of Alexander's Empire by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.